Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Hey, monkeys. And welcome new listeners to the Snark Monkey Podcast. I am Larry Morgan. We are on Twitter at The Snark Monkey. Find us at snarkmonkey.net. You can also subscribe on iTunes, please do, or on iHeartRadio, or on this thing called Spreaker, which exists. Today's guest on Snark Monkey number 49, Kira Sultanovich, a stand-up comedian extraordinaire. She has just released her new special called You Did This to Me, which she taped while 7 months pregnant. It is awesome and funny and a little insane to see this, let's just be honest, loud, full-on pregnant woman do her act, which is physical and crazy, and just it's a really good special, and it is available on Amazon and iTunes and Google Play and all your favorite video streaming sources. Definitely check it out. Worth watching. Really funny. And she's been around for a while. She's been doing stand-up. She's been done the circuit. You've probably seen maybe some of her other specials. She's been on a bunch of different TV shows. And for 8 years was the truly obnoxious voice in the photo booth on Jay Leno's Tonight Show, if you remember that segment. And she's just really fun and has a really interesting background. Born in the Ukraine, grew up in San Francisco. And we talk about a whole bunch of stuff, and she comes in raring to go with way more energy than you would expect from somebody who has a 9-month-old who has not learned how to sleep through the night. Way more energy than I had, and I don't have a baby, as far as you know. So, there you go. Enjoy. This is Snark Monkey. No, get right to it. Do I need anything else? We have no sponsor. This space available for sponsorship right here. You can have this prime real estate in the Snark Monkey Podcast. Oh, my phone's going to be ringing off the hook. No, seriously, reach out. Come on. You know you want to. Let's go. Snark Monkey number 49. Here's Kira Sultanovich. I enjoyed your Periscope this morning.
Did you see that?
You're apparently your first attempt to either A, Periscope, or B, jog with Periscope, or both. I don't know.
It was my first everything, yes.
Have you jogged before?
It's been a long time, okay. as you can tell.
No, stop.
I'm a little wide.
Had a baby, and you look great.
I didn't just have a baby. That's the thing.
Yeah,
she's 9 months. There's plenty of time to get a couple sit-ups in, cut down on some carbs.
Now, you need to cut yourself a little slack, actually, lady. Because
I have. These slacks are bigger. You are right. These are the bigger slacks I am wearing. I wanted to Periscope today because everyone's been telling me you have to do more on social media.
Oh, the big push is always create content.
I can't tell you how much that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I long for the days of newspapers and like just AM radio. How about that?
Right.
No offense.
No, that's
but
fine.
But I really love those days. Remember when a dad would ignore you because they had the newspaper in front of their face?
Yes.
Now it's just a phone in front of our faces and we're ignoring our children.
And everybody ignores each other.
Yes.
I actually saw somebody, because to me, there's stuff about ritual that just is really something that kind of is embedded in you. And I would do the same thing for the longest time, just opening that paper and spending time with that and going through that. It feels so ancient now. And I had to wean myself off that because, for one, the LA Times started to get like a pamphlet at some point. There was nothing in it anymore. And then it was just hard to find. It's like,
well,
unless it's delivered to your door.
My dad still reads the paper.
Of course.
But I think it's only the Sunday. I think that's all he gets is the Sunday paper.
I think some of them are.
That's it.
Practically all they really will bring you.
Well, he's in San Francisco.
Right.
So the Sunday paper always had something called the Pink Pages.
The Chronicle. I lived in the Bay Area for a while. My wife and I loved the Sporting Green and
the pink
section, yeah.
And that's what I would read every Sunday. And I go to his house and I see him, and now he reads like he's a sleuth. He reads with a huge, I mean, it's oversized, this enormous.
It's like a prop magnifying glass.
It's so big. And then sometimes he looks at me, like he looks up from the paper. I go, Pop, what are you reading? And like his eyeball just comes out at me. But he sits there and he reads the paper and he still reads it. And I love that. But then he also calls me with questions about his cell phone. Like, I don't know how to set this alarm. And I go, until you get an iPhone, I can't have a conversation with you. Because he has some crazy phone that's
some off-brand.
It's not even a Samsung. It's like a flam-flung. And there's an icon. I go, well, is there a picture of an alarm clock? He's like, I have a monkey climbing a tree. I'm like, all right, try that. I don't know what that's going to be. But I love that feeling. So anyways, going back, I did Periscope today for the first time.
Yes.
And I thought, if I'm going to do it, which everyone tells me I have to do, I need to attach it to something, right? So today I decided I'm going to start jogging again. I had the baby in the stroller. She's sleeping. And I thought, okay, so if I jog and I Periscope myself jogging, like here I am, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
Then it makes me accountable. But then somebody texted me, Dean Edwards, if you're listening, very funny comedian, and he goes, nobody scopes, is what he called it,
right?
While jogging. And I said, well, then I'm a visionary.
Yeah, well, why is that a criticism if you're breaking new ground? What do people do? I mean, I've Periscoped too. I basically get on the air at night when I do my radio show, and they see me standing there waiting to talk before the next song. It's not, I don't know.
People love it.
At least you were doing something. People Periscope and literally just sit there and wait for people to comment, and then they just read back the comments that are coming up on the screen. What's happening to the kids of America, Kira?
And that person has a development deal. They're going to have their own television show now.
Well, be careful. You'll be forced into some sort of, you know, jogging reality show or something.
Let's get forced into that so I can stop forcing myself into pants. And I know people are going to be like, you're a 10 in the Midwest. I don't live in the Midwest.
No, and when you get your TV show, you're going to stop wearing pants? Is that what you're saying? Am I interpreting that wrong?
How do you get a TV show?
Oh. Just figuring this out.
That's the plan.
Congratulations. I know you didn't just have the baby, but everybody's just watching the special, which just went on Amazon Prime, which is great. It's really good.
Thank you.
Wow, you are pregnant.
Very pregnant.
In that.
Yes.
And I kept thinking, wow, she looks like literally. Now, I haven't finished it yet. I watched it last night because we had to change our recording time. Uh-huh. I thought I was going to watch it tonight, and then we changed it today.
Yes.
And so I have 22 minutes left on it because I just got really sleepy, not
spoiler,
because of the special.
Baby comes out.
So, see, that's what I was going to say. At this point, because the special's so good, but if you don't have the water break and spray in front of the guy in the front row, then I'm going to be really bummed.
I know.
Yeah.
You know,
did you want that?
There's a director's cut that I will release.
Oh, extras.
Where we CGI? Or is it just CG?
Yeah, I think you just CGI.
You could say CGI.
But it's hipper to just say CG.
CG.
Yeah.
A baby coming out is what I pitched my director so many times. I think that people thought it would be funny, ha ha ha, but they don't realize it'd actually be a tragedy.
Yeah.
You'd be so, but everyone's like, you should have the baby during your special. Yeah, because that's how they come out. You just think about it. And
you get the red light.
You get like 3 or 4 cups of coffee, if you know what I mean. A bran muffin, and then let nature take its course. That's not how it happens. And also, wow, that'd be terrible.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, this is baby number 2. And honestly, I could have just gone to the restroom and had this baby.
I was going to ask.
So much easier.
I was going to try. Thank God you are so willing to just volunteer information. It crosses off so many questions that I wanted to delicately ask, like, how was the birth? Did it last a long time?
I should have periscoped it. If I would have known, people don't periscope births. You know, do you have kids?
I have sort of. I have a large adult male who was a child at one point. So it's hard to relate now to, but I can tell you what they grew up to be.
Okay, that just sounds like almost like a hostage situation or an Amber Alert.
I quote, adopted a 24-year-old man. Yeah, I have a 24-year-old son.
But so you have him, like he's yours?
Yes, as far as I know.
It just sounds like he showed up a week ago on your doorstep.
Here's the problem. It's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that there is an adult man that is my son now. It just happened like out of nowhere. But it's cool because he's like a buddy and we have beers together and stuff and it's great. And we have the same sense of humor and we fart at each other. It's stupid.
But he's living with you.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, let me tell you the song that I sing to my 9-month-old at 3 o'clock in the morning when she wakes up and needs to be rocked back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaving on a jet plane. I cannot tell you. Everyone's like, it goes by so fast. But at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're rocking them back to sleep.
Yeah.
And they won't sleep. It does not feel like it's going by so fast.
Not fast enough, anyway.
And then you get sad because you're like, oh, I don't want to wish that this period was over because then you never get it back. But at the same time, I like to feel like a human being and sleep when everyone's sleeping on my time zone.
You're going to miss the cute little babies.
Yeah.
Of course, because they're cute and they're adorable and they make faces and they smile.
Right.
And that's what? Percentage of the time that they're not screaming or pooping or being miserable or whatever. You're going to miss that, but then you're going to get to the point where they're obnoxious teenagers. I mean, what's your older child is how
five.
Old? Okay, five.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, five.
Yeah.
What does five mean? I can't remember five.
This dude.
You have a guy and a girl.
Yes.
All right, so the five-year-old boy.
This guy, I feel like, and I know people are going to be like, you're paranoid, but I feel like he has come back from some parallel universe to, like, he's connected to the government. Like, I'm sure that he's here to just spy on me.
Interesting.
And relay information to my creditors.
Okay.
Because he hears everything.
No, wait a minute. The
we have three stories in our house.
The credit bureaus actually have the technology to send somebody from a different dimension or a time machine.
Yes.
And that's what they're going to spend their time doing?
Because no one would ever put that together.
They're going to send small children to come back and collect your bills. They're not going to kill Hitler.
No.
No?
No, because that's a whole rigmarole.
Yeah, I know. The end result is that who knows what's going to happen.
But all he does, he knows everything. He hears everything. He repeats everything. The other day he said to me something about the baby, right? He was like sitting on her head. And I was like, dude, what's the number one rule of life? And he said kindness, which is what I've taught him. Like, that's the number one rule of just being a human. That's all there is, really.
Good. Yes.
Kindness.
Nice. Nice.
And then I go, and what are you doing right now? And he said, I'm playing with Claire. I'm being kind. You're sitting on her her nostrils where oxygen should go. Anyway, so
perspective, you know?
His take on kindness.
Yes.
He hears everything. He says everything. He said to me the other day, something, mommy, he goes, mommy, you're always telling me this on a daily basis. And I was like, you're on timeout for using daily basis. How do you know? What are you saying to me right now?
He's keeping track, obviously.
He knows everything. I know everyone's like, my kid's a genius. I don't think he's a genius. I think he's a spy. He's working for the government. And he's here to take me down.
Wow.
Yes.
Is it working?
Yes. Look at me.
You're breaking down in front of me.
I'm a mess.
Oh, my God.
Because he just knows and hears everything. And he's constantly aware of everything. How does a five-year-old keep track unless you're either half a robot, I don't know what he is, or you have an IFB in your ear and someone from another government is talking to you and telling you what to say.
All right.
Those are the only two options. You tell me another option.
So of all the pitches, obviously your brain works unlike almost anybody else's in the world, but you've had two amazing ideas for pitches. We need to keep track of this stuff.
Okay, write them down.
I'm writing your coattails.
Okay.
The first one was it was jogging. Was that it? Was it?
Yes.
Was it the jogging the reality
jogging,
show?
The jogging reality show.
I'm not
show.
Real high on that one anymore for some
Why
reason.
Why not?
But the 5-year-old as a Terminator, I think we got something there, right? Terminators with babies? I mean, that's...
Who would have suspected that?
Oh, my God.
And this isn't just the Soviet in me talking here. This
well,
is, I think, a legitimate
that.
Concern because this kid knows way too much.
By the way, spoiler alert for the latest season of The Americans. That's what happens. The 5-year-old
Such
turns
a good
on
show,
him.
Right?
Isn't that great?
Such a good show.
Yeah. Is your family... It's based on your family, right?
It's,
your
yes.
parents, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know they just didn't want me to be a part of it, so
they never let you in on it.
Yeah, there's like a cease and desist.
I love not just in the special, but I've been watching your comedy for a while, and your take on your parents is so awesome because it's so specific. Everybody who has really unusual parents, and that's pretty much everybody, I think.
Yeah.
But the fact that you've got the accent and their background and their perspective and how that's related.
There's a lot of yelling.
And they're loud. I mean, and you have, and I'm one of these delicate things, and I'm sure that you know this, you have a powerful voice that can operate at varying levels of high decibels. Do you have a whisper in you?
Yes, I just told you how I sing the song to my 9-month-old. Leaving on a jet
See, that's
plane.
Lovely. You do it's, have a lovely dude, voice.
It's lovely. That's
yeah, okay,
my whisper.
So your range is huge.
Huge.
But the yelling is a big thing.
Yelling is a big thing.
That's communicating in the family.
Are we allowed to say any
you
language
can say
on this?
You want.
Any words?
Yeah.
Okay, so in Russian, the Russian word for how, like how am I going to get there? How am I going
right.
to do this?
Right.
Is cock.
Okay. How's it spelled?
K, the Russian K, yeah. The Russian A, the Russian K.
Right.
Cock.
Okay.
Cock. How? So I'm on the phone with my dad, and I'm walking with my baby, and my dad wants me to get to San Francisco, and then we have to do all these things and travel plans and organize this. And I'm like, okay, you tell me. Cock. Cock. Right, because I'm doing my like you know Wranglish, like Russian and English combined. So it's like every other word is Russian and English, and the Russian
you
and English
back and forth all the time.
Yes, but I forget that I can't isolate that word in the middle of the grocery store, where I'm like, okay, great, cock, cock. Tell me, you tell me, cock.
What?
And people
yeah.
are. Making way
yeah.
in the out like in the aisles as I'm walking down, they're like stepping out of my way.
Yeah, what is the lady in the produce section thinking?
Screaming
that
cock.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is it like, are you ordering something? What is going
I'm
on?
Just, yeah, I guess I'm ordering it over the phone. I guess you can do anything now. You can Instacart a cock.
So when did your parents move over to the States, and how did San Francisco come about?
Well, first so I was born in the Ukraine.
Right.
Right. So then we had to go to Italy. So we left
That's
as
right.
refugees.
Right.
So then we had to go to Italy and wait for paperwork, which was, let's be honest, fake, I'm sure. And and then in Italy, we had a choice to go to Canada or the U.S. And we failed some sort of Canadian... I don't know.
You had tried to get into Canada.
It was either Canada or U.S. And then, I don't know, they gave you like a hockey quiz. I don't know what it was. But my parents failed it. And so I was like, America!
Yay!
And so we first came to New York. And then got a place in New Haven, Connecticut. And we were one of the first Jewish families. Soviet. They would call it Soviet Jewry. Such a bizarre. It's just
wow.
so, yeah. And one of the first Jewish families... to come to this part of Connecticut.
Seriously?
Yes. We were the newspaper. And we still have the clippings. Where it's like, the Jews are here. Like, I guess New Haven just needed Jews so badly.
Wow.
They set us up with a townhouse, 2-story townhouse. We came from a one room. The one room might have been as big as a studio. 4 people in one room. in the Lviv, Ukraine,
right,
to a two-story townhouse, and they hooked my parents up with jobs and cars, and you know they accepted us.
Wow.
And now it's
an oddity, is some sort of like, or there was a quota they needed.
There must have been a Jewish quota.
Were they before that filtering them at the New York border or something? What was the deal?
I don't know how New Haven does not have an influx of Jews.
Look, let's face it. New Haven does tend to lend, you know, the picture would be white Catholic.
It's WASPy.
Yeah,
yes.
Sure. But how does some not slip in?
They were excited. We had news crews there.
Now, why would you leave that? You're treated like Jew royalty.
Because my parents.
Royalty.
My parents were like, it is freezing here and we just left freezing. So someone said, come to California, but I guess they didn't let them in on the fact that San Francisco is still freezing.
Yes.
And we moved to San Francisco. So the way that a lot of immigrants, maybe to this day, still work is that you find someone that is willing to not sponsor you, but sponsor is a word I guess you could use, but also like help you.
Right.
So that they can kind of be your anchor.
Yeah. You either have family that's already here or you find somebody who's willing to just help you.
Right.
You know, integrate into
even
the
just
society.
Vouch for you in the community. And so that's why you get these huge Russian communities. I mean, that San Francisco has a really big Russian community.
Right.
And that's how that happened, because it was like one or two families, and then that was it. Just boom, floodgates opened.
Yeah, you were the second Russian-born stand-up comedian who has been in this room talking to me.
I will kill the other one. Who is it? I will.
You can't kill Yakov Smirnov.
Oh,
he is, please.
Yakov, yes.
Yakov, and his story is bizarre and strange. And I think I made the dumb mistake of asking, have you gone back to Odessa? And he looked at me like I was insane. Like, why would I go back to it? I mean, have you?
I have.
You've visited the home country.
Yes. And I realized when my dad, we sat in a taxi cab in Moscow, and he said, okay, listen to me. You shut up. You don't speak. You do not speak in Russian. Because when we left, it was the late 70s, right? That's the last time my parents spoke, street Russian, right? So everything they know, all the Russian language they know is from the late 70s. So that's who taught me how to speak in Russian.
Right.
So I go back to Moscow, and I sound like the equivalent of someone who like time traveled. So I'm like, hey, what it is, Jive Turkey? Give me some skin, Slim. And my dad is like, shut your face. You do not speak. I couldn't talk because that's what I sound
like. It would be the equivalent if you walking around right now here in America going up your nose with a rubber hose
sit on it, Potsy. Which is how my parents learned English. 100% true.
Of course, watching TV.
They learned. I did a pilot with Cindy Williams, who was Shirley. Laverne and Shirley. And when I call my dad and I go, you're not going to guess who is here on the set with me. And he's like, put her on the phone right now. And my mom was like, that is how we learn English. And so they put her on the, I put her on speaker and she's talking very sweetly, right, to my family. And they're like complimenting her in their broken English. Like, you teach us English. And she's like, well, I did a really bad job. I did a terrible job.
Yeah, so no, at what point, obviously, so you were born there, you were a little girl. Suddenly, I want to do a bad Russian accent. You were a little girl when you left, so you were obviously fluent in Russian as far as a six-year-old or whatever it could be, or a tiny person.
It was my first language.
Yeah.
Right.
So where along the line did you recognize, because I have the same thing, not at all the same thing. I grew up in Texas. I recognized how cornpone I sounded at one point and made an active a goal to get rid of that accent. And being in radio and stuff, too, helped because I was around people from the Midwest and jocks from, Arizona who has they have no discernible accent, as far as I can tell, in Arizona. So I was aware of it. At what point were you thinking, I have to lose this accent, or was the accent even really that prevalent?
No, there was no accent. What happens is when I spend a lot of time with my family, so even just a weekend, I have a broken English syndrome that pops up. Right. So I can't form sentences. I have this broken, like my husband even notices it. You know, we'll go to San Francisco, spend the weekend, and all of a sudden, you know, language not so good. I don't know what happens. I have no idea why.
I do the same thing. You will never hear me around here dropping y'alls. But I get back home, and it's y'all this and y'all that, and I'm fixing, and I'm going, and I'm visiting. I have never said here in Los Angeles, yeah, I'm fixing to go visiting, whatever.
But you would do that in Texas.
Absolutely.
In 2016.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, yeah, people still say that there.
I know, but
that's the same thing. If something just switches and I'm back in my homeland again, and I kind of feel like I feel like I have to be accepted in some way and I have to sound like the person there.
Yeah.
But that was me. I was, you know, 18, still sounded like that.
You know, when I lived in London for a year and I tried to pretend like I was British.
How'd that go? Anybody call you on it?
Terrible.
No? Really?
People would look at me crazy. But I just sound like, you know, hello,
like?
Mary Poppins, you know. But
so
after a while.
It was just the cartoon Cockney is what it was.
I tried so hard. Not with people that knew me.
Right.
But if, you know, this is way before smartphones and all that. So if you were lost, you had to actually find a human being and look at them face to face and ask them for directions, right?
Right.
So I remember being a little lost and confused. And I went up to someone and I spoke to them like I was local. And, you know, they looked at me like I was crazy. They were like, okay, you're a crazy person. You're a crazy person. Okay, I'll play along.
All right.
But,
well, it's hard to, it's interesting because people might be thinking, is she putting us on or does she have an accent that she comes from somewhere that's making her sound so strange?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that worked for me in my favor because I just didn't want to be a Yank.
Right.
And that is definitely used. It's so funny. As a Jew, and I feel like I'm so swarthy and oily and greasy, and I just have such a Hasidic Soviet face that when they were like, hey, Yank, I'd be like, you're kidding. Come on, with this face, I got a mustache. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me when they would call me a Yank. I get it. That's what my passport says. But I just don't feel that at all. I mean, you're definitely a Yank. But,
yes.
You know, I just felt like, come on. Like, that just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, you could pass as almost any other. There are like five different possibilities. Somebody could
look
at you and say Italian. I mean,
many.
You've gotten it all, right?
I actually had an Armenian woman try to kidnap me once. In a bank here in Los Angeles.
Right.
Because she assumed I was Armenian. I mean, immediately I got my chin waxed, everything. I took everything off. But she was like this itty-bitty little grandmother, and it was inside of a Wells Fargo, which I believe has a tunnel that goes down to the capital of Armenia, and that's how they just get here. Because every person working at Wells Fargo is Armenian. Anyway, so luckily they could translate, but she grabbed me and she tried to kidnap me. And she just grabbed me by the hand and was just screaming at me in Armenian. And I was like, anybody want to tell me what's happening? Like I yelled at the tellers and they were, she wants to take you home to her son.
Oh.
He's like 40 and unmarried.
So it was
single. So she was like, I'm just going to steal somebody.
So the Armenian way of matchmaking apparently is just to grab someone.
Is an Amber Alert.
Wow.
So I've gotten Bulgarian, you know, a million Ians.
Growing up, what part of San Francisco were you living in most of the time?
In the city. Do you know the city?
I do.
Okay. So we're going to test your knowledge right now.
Well, okay.
Forest Hill Station?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
West Portal?
Okay. Yeah.
Twin Peaks.
I was in the Bay Area for a short amount of time. I lived in San Mateo, and I was in the city as much as I could. It is maybe my favorite place in the world that I've lived the shortest amount of time.
Yeah.
We love the Bay Area. We got this much of it, and it was like our people. It was like our weather. It was everything.
Oh, you like that.
And I'm a Giants fan to this day.
Yeah.
Oh, big time. I remember when I became a Giants fan. And
when was that?
1989 National League Championship Series.
Oh,
Giants,
earthquake.
Cubs. Yeah, that year.
Mm-hmm.
Giants, Cubs, Will Clark at the plate versus Wild Thing, Mitch Williams. An at-bat that lasted like 20 minutes, just fouling off pitches, fouling off pitches, fouling off pitches. knocked one into the infield, got to first base, had that black stuff under his eyes with Will Clark used to wear, and clapped and pointed back to the dugout, and I went, I am in! I am in! Giants fan for life.
Yeah. I was in when I was 8 years old, and my dad would take me to games, and we'll see if you remember, people in the stands, all the fans were chanting, chili, chili, chili. So that was it. When I knew that there was chanting involved, I was like...
That's all it took?
That's all it took, was chanting, because I was eight. So I didn't understand the game. I just understood chanting.
What? So tell me about growing up in San Francisco as a kid, as a teen. What was life like in the city?
You know, it's so sad for me now because it's such a different city.
It's changed. It's phenomenally.
Completely different. Yeah. Unrecognizable.
It was
I think.
A real city.
It was
and
a
it's
town.
It's kind of not.
It's
now.
Not anymore. Who knows
it,
what it is?
And it was it like New York, maybe, it's and some of the East Coast cities, but it's one of the few cities that still existed that had distinctive communities, sections of town that you could identify as a thing, whether it was the Haight or whatever, or Tenderloin, and you know, no matter how bad they got, but they had their own character and they had their own personality.
You know, it's interesting. You could walk through any of those neighborhoods. You could walk through North Beach into Chinatown, go to Union Square, and it was such a small town, you would actually see people that you knew.
Yeah.
You were just like, oh, there's my friend in Chinatown. We're also just going to go get some whatever, dim sum or whatever, you know, or not that we never ate in Chinatown. What am I saying? We always ate in the outskirts, Sunset District or Richmond.
Right.
But, you know, it was that feeling of you could be down in Ghirardelli Square and run into someone.
Mm-hmm.
It was a town.
Yeah.
My favorite memory when I was a kid, when I knew I lived somewhere special, was two blocks from my house was the bus stop for my school, right? So it was a school bus, came around. There were about five or six of us that stood there waiting for the bus. One of my friends, Chinese, the other my friend, Japanese. Another friend was some other, I can't remember now. She was Asian. Myself, Russian. Another mom would come out, just a white, regular old, you know, white mom.
yank.
Yeah.
Just a yank.
Just a yank. And they would all come out and give us a little snack for the road. It was a 5-minute bus ride. But it was like, you're hungry. You haven't had enough breakfast. You're standing out here waiting for the bus. And so the Chinese mom would have a little dumpling or something.
Right.
The Japanese mom would give us a little something. Like, it was so international.
Right.
You know, my Russian mom would just spit. Because Russian food, who eats Russian food? Let's be honest. Russians don't want to eat Russian food.
And you're lucky you got what you got.
But actually, I would get like a little sandwich with the big caviar, the big red caviar,
oh,
the big
God,
spooshy
really?
Kind.
A not... caviar sandwich?
Oh, every day.
Big, fat, nasty caviar sandwich?
I had to eat tongue sandwiches. You can't trade that in elementary school.
But you're not getting PB&J for that.
No, you're not getting anything. But I remember standing there at the bus stop thinking, I think I'm kind of lucky. I think, I don't know, I'm only seven. But I think this is cool and unusual and different.
Yeah.
And
does not exist there anymore, does it?
Not in the same way.
Not that way.
Because those parents were teachers or maybe an artist, because I did grow up with a lot of, you know, hippie, crunchy, tree hugger people as well. Or let's be honest, janitors and even a dentist. Can a dentist afford to live in San Francisco anymore? I don't know.
Maybe.
All the artists have moved out, all the creative people. I mean, I don't know how someone with just a regular job and not like, I'm creating an app that helps you blink.
No, you can't
you know,
do it.
How you can survive in San Francisco.
Well,
anyway.
My son is going through that in New York, trying to find, you know, the all the kids that came out of theater school and are trying to become actors or musicians.
No,
exactly. Trying to figure out where to live without having to be on... Well, he actually lived in the Upper East Side for a couple of years or whatever. But it was this big. My hands are very close together.
Mm-hmm.
Three guys in what basically should have been a closet and what kind of seemed like a combination eating area and kitchen, sort of, and a window that looked at just other windows in brick. And I remember getting off the elevator one time and the hallway being like, I am a thin person. I felt like I was really having trouble. It was like one of those optical illusions where it looks like it gets really narrow and small and tiny at the end, except it wasn't. It really was like that. It came to a point at the end of the hallway.
Are you sure he wasn't incarcerated?
I don't know.
I think it was in prison.
I think it was somebody's dungeon room that they were able to rent out for, you know, like $2,000 a month. So New York's become the same thing. Struggling kids who want to be artists who are trying to do something like that in any major city like that.
Yeah.
It's become so gentrified in some of those areas.
So they used to go to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Now Brooklyn is impossible.
Brooklyn, so he's trying to find the outer edges of Brooklyn.
Newfoundland.
Is that it?
Is where you can afford
to go to Nova Scotia.
It's such a commute, though.
Oh,
such
man.
A commute.
And not a lot of great music clubs there.
Is that what he wants? He wants to be here?
We sent him to theater school in Boston, the most expensive school he got accepted into with no scholarship money, so that he could become a musician now.
Good. Good for him.
But he's an artist, and that's what he wants to be. And he's really good, and it's fine.
My five-year-old has a project that's due
mm-hmm.
next week, where they have to create a big poster with like lots of, you know, bells and whistles of what do you want to be when you grow up?
Right.
And he said, you know, I want to be an army man. And we were like, all right, no, that's not going to happen. I want to let you go to the army. Veterans.
A perspective, yes, absolutely. We respect our military service, but a five-year-old's perspective of what an army man is,
yes,
probably not necessarily connected to the reality of what it's going to be.
Right. And also, you're calling it army man. So I don't think you're ready for that yet. So then
he
was
wants
like,
to be one of those little plastic green characters that he's playing with.
And then he's like, oh, I want to be a police officer. And we're like, all right, dude, you're really missing the point of what we're trying to do for you here. We're really trying to give you a good. I mean, again,
These are noble.
Thank you for your service.
Absolutely.
But
toughest jobs in the world.
Absolutely. And I have a very good friend, Dave Smith, if you're listening. That's his real name. Not like it's just real Dave Smith. He was a police officer for many, many, many years. He's retired. And the stories he tells, I don't wish it upon anyone. So I was like, all right, so pick again. Like, we just keep, like, what? And then my husband's like, well, what do you want him to be? And I go, I don't, honestly, just not a comic.
Really?
No.
Seriously?
It's such a hard life.
Well, yeah. Harder than, would you be okay with Army Man over comic?
I don't know. Are you going to validate my parking? Let's start with that.
Yes, I will, actually.
Okay, then you know what? He could be a comic. It's not that bad. There's actually some perks. I'm going to support him.
No, yes.
But he also talks about wanting to be a stand-up comic and tell jokes, and he's constantly pitching me jokes.
Yeah?
All the time.
Are they any good?
No.
Yeah.
But, you know,
he's fine.
We've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, that's
no,
right.
They're fine. He's five. But it's just like, oh my God, I realized everything he says is going to be rough. Like everything is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously the 9-month-old has no personality yet. You're going to see completely
not
different.
True. Not
really?
True. Not true.
Oh, come on. It's just a little blob
not
still,
true.
Right?
This lady
what?
Is all personality.
Oh, bubbly and happy. And
are you kidding me?
Charmer.
I almost want a drug tester. I want to try to.
What is she doing?
She is crazy.
She's 9 months.
I'll play an audio for you.
All right.
I'm going to play an audio.
Okay.
And this lady is a lunatic.
What's her name? Can
Claire.
We say?
Her Claire. Her name is Claire, yes. You know that I had to crowdfund, right, for my special?
Yeah,
and
that's
one
right.
of the perks, for $20,000, you could help name the baby. Did you not know this?
No, I didn't know this.
It was almost going to be Jerome.
Did somebody step up?
Okay, hold on. It gets better. It gets better. It gets better. This is every day.
For those listening, this is a big, smiling, happy baby. This is not a distressed sound.
No. We're going to drug test her.
She is beside herself with joy.
It's every day. It's every day. This is every day. She's on something. I'm going to test her urine when I get home.
So you've got super happy, joyous, probably going to be on LSD for the rest of her life, Claire. And the five-year-old is this rough and tumble. I'm going to, some one way or another, I'm going to carry a gun and live the hardest life possible.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you, because I'm trying to think about, you know, at that age, we were sitting around waiting to see what Alex's real interests were going to be. And music became a big thing right away. He actually said as a kid he wanted to do cartoon voices. And I was always putting him in, I'm a terrible father. You think you're a bad parent. I would put Alex in a booth when I was producing like radio comedy and stuff, yeah, and have him say as a 4-year-old the worst possible things a 4-year-old should ever say.
Oh,
but just mimic me.
Go,
okay, Alex, say this like this. And he would just, nah, nah, and it would be adorable,
right,
but terrible. You know, like
that Will Ferrell bit where.
Yeah, the janitor.
Was it Adam, the landlord?
The landlord thing.
Was it Adam,
yeah,
McKay's daughter?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, I want my rent! Oh my God, that's,
yeah,
so funny.
But he grew to love kind of being in the booth and he wanted to be a cartoon voice.
That's
and
great.
And then it turned into being an actor and became a musician. So, like, the creative, this streak came out really, really, really early. And it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, no, it's obvious. My kid does want to be, he cannot enter a room like a normal human.
What do you mean?
Oh, it's 5, 6, 7, 8, kickball change, kickball change, ta-da! He comes into his kindergarten, even the teacher and I make eye contact, and she's like, he can't just enter normally. He comes in, he's like, I've arrived. Like, he is
big
all about the show. Yeah, yeah, all about, like.
So where has he got that from? So when did you come to L.A.? At what point did you recognize you were funny enough that you wanted to do this for a living?
Sometimes I don't know. There are some shows. I'm looking at you, Arkansas, where I don't know if this is working.
They're not responding in Arkansas.
In Scratch Your Ass, Arkansas,
yeah,
where I once did a college in the Appalachians. That's the Appalachians, right? Arkansas is Appalachians.
I think that's further up north. It's like West Virginia.
I can't remember.
But it might stretch down there.
I think it stretches down. All so right. They weren't wearing shoes.
Okay.
Anyways, this one kid was like, are you really a Jew? And I said, yeah, trust me, it's not something that you want to pretend to be if you have a chance to pretend to be anything. Maybe British, I've tried that. And he goes, really? I guess I must have been the first Jew he met. And I go, do you want to touch my horns? I was being 100% serious, by the way. And he's like, nuh-uh. And I go, yeah, do you want to? Just wait until the room empties out. He's looking at me like trying to figure out, are you messing with me? And I go, yes or no? Because this is not something I offer everybody. He's like, okay. And I go, all right, just be chill. Just chill out. Wait till everybody leaves. So I was doing this college, right? So it was
right,
like a big auditorium. And so everyone leaves. And I go, all right, so look, I just got them shaved down. So I'm going to part my hair. Be gentle. And the whole time he's like, what? He's just looking at me like, oh my God, is this going to happen?
Yeah, but he's really hanging in
No, he's on every word.
Yeah.
And I go, okay. So I start to part my hair kind of to the side. And I go, I'm not kidding you when I say, you have to touch them gently. So I lean my head down a little bit. He kind of leans his hand out. And he goes, are there really horns? And I go, yes, dude, come on, hurry up. Someone's going to walk in. So he's like feeling around my scalp and I go, do you right there? Do you feel it? He goes, no. I go, right there. Do you feel them? No, I don't. It's because I don't have horns. You idiot.
Well, maybe that's not why you're not welcome in that part of the country anymore. poor kid.
No, I knew when I was a kid. I definitely knew that I didn't know what comedy was. I didn't know, like, oh, this is considered stand-up, or
right,
this is sketch, or, you know, I Love Lucy is different than Carol Burnett, or, you know, all the different places I was absorbing it. But I knew that I wanted to do whatever Mork from Ork was doing.
Right. Whatever
that
was.
When he sat on the couch with his head, whatever,
yeah,
that was, I needed to do that. I just didn't know how to explain that to my parents. And I tried to convey that to them, and they were like, just shut up and sit down. And I'm like, but you don't understand. This is what I want to do. And they're like, okay, you put on jacket if you're going outside. Like, they never listened.
Did they want you to be a certain thing? Did they have expectations?
You know, they had me in every single Soviet thing you would put a kid in. So I did ice skating. I did gymnastics. Mm-hmm. I did chess. I did piano. I played the cello, which was a terrible mistake. What other Russian stuff?
I think you covered it.
I covered
it.
A lot of them.
Those are the main ones.
Nothing
stuck, though.
No, it was terrible.
You were not good at any of those things.
You know, I think I was decent at, they for some reason also put me in track and field. I didn't know that was a Soviet thing, but I guess anything to like get to the Olympics, maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
But
those were the super, besides the government, those were the superstars during Soviet Russia.
That was the only way you got out.
Literally like the opportunity to move on.
Yeah.
So that was still in them that this was
your
best break.
Right.
Right.
Get into ice skating, chess, you know, all the stuff that was just awful.
But did they like watching TV? If they learned English from watching Laverne and Shirley and all that, was it a TV addicted household? Were you guys sharing all these shows and seeing all these TV shows together?
A lot of TV.
Yeah,
a lot of TV. But again, back then it was five channels. Mm-hmm. You know, 2, 4, 5, 7, 12, and UHF.
Right.
You know, that was it.
Which was really hard to figure out how to get.
Or 9 was PBS.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
You know, I mean, that was it. So there wasn't a ton. I mean, there was, but it wasn't like now.
Right.
Where I go to my dad's house and it's 1,000. It goes up to 1,000. we watched a lot of TV, but they just didn't. Oh, ballet. That was the one. I knew I was missing one.
Rushing.
I knew I was missing one. Yeah,
jeez.
I did ballet, which I got kicked out of. I got kicked out of the ballet because I was talking. I was talking. I was disruptive.
Right.
I was cracking jokes. I would constantly mimic. It was terrible. I was a douchey kid. If I look back and I look at myself and if I'm honest, I'm sure I was a douche.
Well, in those circumstances, sure. But if you hadn't been, you know, supposedly trying to do ballet or play the cello, but people recognize, you know, she's probably not meant to be doing that because she's got this outgoing personality and she needs to express herself.
I needed to find the funny in things. That's what it was. So I wasn't like a douche where I was like, I'm going to set the garbage can on fire. Like that kind of like, I'm going to.
Did you get in trouble?
Yeah. So I would get in trouble because I was in the San Francisco Ballet. And I mean, I was in it. Like, I got cast in the Nutcracker when I was a kid.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
No, when you said you got kicked out, I thought you didn't get very far at all. But you got as far as
actually
performing. Oh, no, I was performing.
That was like my first paying gig.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I was in the ballet.
All right.
And
so it's in the DNA. You can't get it out of there.
Well, yeah. And I played piano for 8 years, you know, and my mom's mom played in the Russian circus. She was the pianist for circus. So it's like, but I was terrible at them because I would come home from my piano lessons, which were with the most strict Soviets that you could find. That's the piano teacher you chose for me. These super strict Soviets. One guy had a stick.
Uh-huh.
And
I was
going to
say,
like,
did you ever get hit on the hands?
Of course. Yeah. Like wrists, get your wrists.
Oh,
you know,
God, yes.
My wrists would drew up and you'd like, you know, pat my wrist with a stick. And I'd come home and I would do this entire monologue and crack my parents up and other adults that were around and just like crack them up because I would do this entire monologue of my piano lesson that I just had, making fun of, you know, his name was Vladimir, and making fun of him. And they loved it. They were laughing. They loved it. And they would just send me right back again next week. So they didn't see it like, oh, maybe she's miserable. They saw it like, well, too bad. So sad.
Yeah.
Go back and get more.
Yeah.
But they understood that I would try to find the funny in a terrible situation.
So when I have these conversations in here, there's usually always a champion, someone along the way who recognizes the thing that you should be doing and kind of helps you get there. And also there's usually kind of this moment, this little, sometimes it's just an accident where things happen, like somebody doesn't show up or somebody pushes you out. I mean, do you have that person who kind of got you on the path, who really kind of gave you the chance or the push or helped you recognize that, yeah, this was a thing you should do?
Well, as much as I complain and criticize my parents, they did, you know,
they
facilitate
came around
to, you know, whatever if I did say I want to do stuff, they
so
were
you
like,
decided you wanted to do this.
Yeah.
And they finally bought in. at some point.
All right. So, like, I told them I wanted to take classes, you know, San Francisco, the American Conservatory Theater, the ACT. I was like, I want to take classes there, so I need you to write me a check. You know, and as much as they gave me money or paid for piano or ballet or whatever, they were like, okay. So they let me take classes at the ACT. But they here's the thing. They're so, I guess, consistent is the word. So, like, they supported me. But then when there was, like, a recital or a play, they were like, we don't have time for this monkey business. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, when I did run track and field and I had, like, a cross-country meet, I was like, we got to go. Like, there's a cross-country meet. My mom was like, okay, that's not, you go, but it's not for me to go. And what am I, cheer for you in the stands? I'm like, all right, fair enough. Like, so they supported me, but then, you know, they were still consistent in their, like, please don't give me headache. So my dad was supportive also. Like, he once said, I'm going to find you an agent in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a big leap.
Yeah. In his Soviet way, he just, like, goes door to door, knocking door to door, and, like, brings a headshot of mine. And this is why to this day I feel like I don't look like a Yank. Because back in the 80s, it wasn't dark hair, dark eyes. You know, it was Cheryl Teagues and Billy Joel's wife. What's her face?
Christie Brinkley.
Thank you, Christie Brinkley. It was blondes, blue
right,
eyes.
Right.
That was American. And so he got a lot of no's. And instead of just buttoning his lips about it, he told me, nobody wants you. They say you look like foreigner. Do you have to tell me this? I'm 12 and my body is going through so much right now. You know, it's like,
you don't have
to tell me that that's what they said.
It doesn't seem like a very Russian thing to nurture self-esteem. It doesn't seem like that's built into the background.
No,
there.
Because how are you going to get everyone to buy into communism if you tell someone they're special?
Yeah, that's right. Life sucks. You're lucky you have what you've got.
Yes. Get in line. Everyone else is getting in line. You're all going to get the same stuff. And don't expect anything different. So they helped. But I think the moment probably was sometime in, I guess high school. I went to School of the Arts, high school. And it was probably in high school.
Yeah. Well, that's a great place to, you find your tribe, basically.
Yeah.
You're all talking the same language.
Right.
Which must have been eye-opening for you a little bit.
I could crack jokes.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, not in all the, like, you know, AP English, he wasn't crazy about that.
Right.
But I could, in most other classes, I could be funny and it was okay. And it was like, well, that's Kira. You know, she's the class clown, you know, and that's fine. But I always wanted to do it in a way that made people laugh, not annoyed people.
Right.
So if I was annoying, or if I saw an annoying kid, I'd be like, ugh, that guy's obnoxious.
Well, see, and those guys are class clowns. Those are the typical class clowns. They're the ones
right.
who want to disrupt,
and
kind of be the center of attention.
I just wanted to make people laugh.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted.
Mm-hmm. And usually I found when I talk to stand-ups who were kind of in that situation in school, they usually, as much as they might have annoyed the teacher, they also could get on the teacher's good side. You had the way of, you were working the room even that early.
I did have to go back to my high school and apologize to a couple. Which I got a chance to because I went and spoke at my high school.
Because
it is a school of the arts, you know, they ask alumni who are working in the industry to come and speak.
Great. That's great.
So when I was there, I saw Mr. Pannone and I said, look, I have to say. He goes, no, I know what you're going to say. Don't say. I go, no, I'm so sorry. He goes, no, I go, no, now, 20 years later, you're like, oh, it's fine. But at the time, you know, you hated me. He's like, hate is a strong word. It's a strong word because I always gave him the business.
Yeah.
I would sing songs. Like, if I didn't do my work, if I forgot my homework, I would sing a song to get out of it. I would say, Mr. Pannone, yes, I am so sorry. I forgot my homework. I'll bring it to Mari. Like,
oh,
I would say, oh, yeah, I would try to get out of stuff by making him laugh. I put on a show. And so I did apologize to him and Mr. Hafey, who didn't accept my apology, I don't think.
Oh, really?
I don't know. He's kind of a jerk.
Grudgingly.
He was
just
like,
acknowledged
who
your
are
presence.
You?
Oh.
And I was like, all right, forget it.
You tried.
I tried.
That's the thing that matters. How long you been doing stand-up now? Have you counted the years?
You know, if I would have known that the anniversary date was so important, I would have made a note in my mind. I didn't know
you
that
don't really have a...
years later people would be asking me. I want to say 2000 is when I really started to go up every night, write voraciously. Is that the right word?
Sure.
Really,
it's a word, right?
Just really focus all of my energy.
Were you here or were you up?
Yeah, I started in LA, but like 98, 99, I was futzing around, I was doing open mics, but I wasn't taking it seriously. And then Columbine happened, and I believe that was like 99, I want to say. Hmm. And I went to an open mic that night when Columbine happened, and some open micers were joking about it, and I said, I don't want to be a part of this community if that's what you guys think is funny. Like, that's your first reflex.
Right, right.
Because that was huge for us. You know, there were, I'm sure, school shootings before that, but that really encapsulated so much. And it was such a heartbreaking alarm, like a wake up call.
Right, right.
So I kind of took myself out of the scene for a little while. I just thought that's really messed up.
How your comedy doesn't really approach dark stuff, at least as far as I've seen. I mean, you can have a dark take on things.
Yeah.
You can kind of push the envelope, but you don't seem like you want to upset or have you don't want people to be uncomfortable, other than pointing out kind of just their own personal.
Right.
You know, failings or whatever, just because you're part of that group. You're more inclusive, I think, in terms of wanting to relate to people. There are
so many different types of comics.
Right.
So some are like, I want to get people to think.
Right.
Okay, I get that. Bill Hicks, I get it. You know, Carlin, I get it.
Sure.
And then other comics are like, F the audience. I don't care what they say. I'm there for me. That happens too.
Yeah.
All right, great. Make it a masturbatory time for yourself on stage.
Right.
But I truly think that when I'm on stage, I want people to have a good time, to laugh, to enjoy themselves. This is their night out. They paid money. They got a sitter. They valet. They got dinner, drinks. This is like an evening, and I'm their entertainment. And I just want to find whatever's happening in my life, because it's all 99% is what's happening to me at this time.
Right.
I just want to convey it in a funny manner. And it's a little therapeutic for me and other people. I do a lot of mom shows, right? Mm-hmm. So when a lot of women get together and someone on stage is like, you know, my kid just shit up his back too. You know, yay! You know, and you can make it funny.
You're speaking their language.
Yeah. And then that's something more meaningful to me than just like, I'm up here, I'm talking, you listen to me, I'm in control. I don't know. I don't enjoy that.
Yeah, you look like you're having a good time when you're up there.
And I am, and I want everyone to have a good time.
Right.
I am a people pleaser to the core, coming from a family that was a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling, a lot of hitting. You know, I want everyone to have a good time.
Right.
Can we all just laugh so I don't get hit?
So did your style change from when you were first trying things out? Because usually, everybody kind of starts usually by trying to be somebody they really like they emulate somebody that they not stealing necessarily, but
right.
There's usually a style they gravitate to before you kind of start to find your own. Were you?
You know, I had a lot of one-liners,
yeah.
Which I don't really have now. I have more stories,
yeah.
But it's so funny nowadays. We're talking about Periscope, bringing it back.
Right.
You can have a million followers on Vine, and all of a sudden, the Hollywood Improv wants to headline you.
Right.
Okay, but you're 22 and a half.
Right.
And you don't have a lot of life experience, and you don't know how to craft a joke. So what are you going to talk about? So I feel like until I got life experience, I really didn't have much to discuss.
Yeah, you can be a good performer or even a good craftsperson up there, but until you get that, it seems like for every stand-up comic, I've heard Louis C.K. talk about this, or people talk about him, like, because he was like weird concepts comic for the longest time.
Right.
There would just be like these weird non sequitur stuff that were funny, but when he became really personal, not necessarily like dark or exposing a side of himself, but just literally bringing out something that was from him.
Yes.
He is where he turned the corner. And it seems like where every comic really gets into the richest material is when they go, oh, yeah, I have stuff I can talk about.
Right.
And it turns out people will relate to this, but I have a way of turning it and making it my own at the same time.
Yeah, it's like you can go to TGI Fridays and get a hamburger,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay, and it'll be a hamburger, and you'll eat it, and you'll be like, oh, that was good. Or you can go to a chef that's going to say, you know, I'm Portuguese, so I'm going to make this hamburger have a flair of some. But I also lived in Asia, so I'm going to take my life experience of right. living in Asia and Portugal, and I'm also this, and I also once experienced this when I traveled, or whatever. They're going to take their experiences and their life and their grandmother and their... And they married someone that's from another country or whatever, and they're going to create food that is just so much more interesting. No offense, TGI Fridays, but it's not just bun and meat. Which I feel like, sorry, the older you get, the more you hate the younger generation. But I feel like when I see a 22-year-old comic and I go, okay, Ruby Tuesdays. You just give me a Ruby Tuesdays right now.
Just cranking them out, yeah.
You just give me some meat with bread, and it's fine, and people will consume it, and they'll be like, yeah, that was a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm trying to give you something else. I'm trying to, like, give you a hamburger with some of my own tears in it. You know, I've seasoned it with my own anger.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I can
right,
say
I'm
the saltiness, but that's different.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I've seasoned it with experience.
As long as it's just tears. As long as you promise that's all you're putting in there.
No placenta.
All right.
I would never do that.
Okay.
But, you know, I feel like it's just, it makes for a richer meal.
All right. So now you've got two kids. It's a different dynamic than one kid. It's a different dynamic than being pregnant. By the way, you're going to do another pregnant special, or are we done?
No, never.
Okay, all right.
Never.
So how does is stand-up still satisfying to you? I mean, because you do a lot of TV, and mm-hmm. you had we haven't even touched on your long-term relationship with The Tonight Show
yeah.
and the photo booth, but you've talked about that so much. But that was cool. I mean, that was such
fun.
A great gig.
So much fun getting insurance, too.
Isn't that nice?
Health insurance.
Yeah.
I know. It was great. It was meant to be just one time.
Right.
One time, and it lasted over 8 years.
So what's next? What's the family's bigger. That
yeah.
means more responsibility.
Yeah.
You obviously are trying to find as many opportunities as you can to leave that responsibility and say yes to random podcasts like this one.
Yeah.
Or gigs or whatever. Are you still going to go on the road? Are you still going to try and do that?
I still do the road a little bit. I feel like nowadays you have to do 5 different things.
Mm-hmm.
You just
yeah.
have to.
Right.
So, like, last month I was writing on a show for a little while, and then I'm on the road, and now I'm pitching shows. And I have a game show coming out that I shot in February.
Winsanity.
Winsanity!
Yay!
Donald Faison is the host, one of the nicest people.
He seems like he's the total coolest dude.
He is.
I'm glad to know that's true.
Unbelievably kind and sweet and generous and a great sense of humor.
We know him from Scrubs and some other stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Clueless, Scrubs, movies. He's, I mean.
Awesome.
He's just so much fun.
What's the deal? What's the thing? What is it?
What is the Winsanity?
Yes.
You know what? We shot 40 episodes and it was like a blur.
You're still not sure?
I'm not sure. No. It's a game show where everybody in the audience can win. So everyone's wearing these green watches, right? And we randomly, you know, smack down a Winsanity button. The watches are like, they're all going off, right? Someone's watch goes off. That person gets to go on stage and play. They're stacking facts in numerological, am I saying that right? Order.
Yeah.
English is my language second. But they're also playing for prizes that people in the audience can win. Now, the audience can also help. So they're yelling out where they think you're wrong. It's high energy.
Sounds crazy.
It's crazy. But then people also, if you do not stack one fact correctly, you're out, and someone new from the audience takes your place. So it's like they're helping you, but they also want you to sit down because then they can go up there. And we gave away cars and
we gave away
money and just tons of prizes, like jewelry, vacations, a lot of vacations. It was so much fun. And I got to be, so Donald's the main host. I'm just like his wacky sidekick.
Oh, that's great.
And that was a dream job.
This is GSN, right?
Yes, Game Show Network.
Okay, cool. Winsanity.
June 9th.
And you've done a lot of TV. You're actually really good on some of the, I mean, there's a lot of reality stuff you've been a part of, and you're good with, because you're quick on your feet, and you can just kind of, I love, yeah. Like in the special, I love it when people are good with crowd work, and when they kind of can bring it back in. I don't want to get into nuts and bolts necessarily, but I love good crowd work, because that just feels like, because you can craft a great set, and you're such a, like, your performance has so much going on. I was actually, I haven't even finished the thing yet. I'm worried about you the whole time I'm watching. It's like you were exerting so much energy. You're going to squeeze that baby out just by sheer force at some point. There's so much happening.
I peed a lot.
All right.
No, I'm being 100% honest.
I believe you. That's the thing. I'm going to just give you a little unsolicited advice. You don't have to tell people all these things. You really don't have to.
I know, but we just talked about how, you know, the closer to the bone, the sweeter the meat, right?
did we talk about that?
Well, didn't we just say Louis C.K. was talking about things
but there are still things that maybe you can hold back. Just little.
Not urine, obviously.
Apparently not.
Apparently not.
But you are great. You're great on your feet and working with people. I love crowd work stuff, because that's that when you're going off the page or whatever, and you're just kind of playing with people, and you can have fun with that, and you can bring it back around and do the callbacks and stuff. I love that stuff. That's somebody who knows what she's doing.
Well, a lot of comics would never do that at a special.
No.
They might at a regular set. So a lot of my friends who watched it, they were like, what were you thinking? Why would you do that? And it's because I feel like a robot if I don't.
Right.
I can't just do a monologue up there. I can't just talk as if these people aren't there. I need to talk to the people. It's like something inside of me. I've done it. I did it for my Showtime special. I did it for this one and other TV spots that I've done. I have to. I feel like if you're sitting there and you're looking at me and I don't acknowledge you by at least just saying like, oh, cool. What's happening with you? Who are you? And making it feel like it's not just, you're just any old audience. You're not just people. Like, I can't treat the audience like they're just prostitutes. And I'm going to put my joke in you and I don't care about you at all. And there's money exchanged and then I'll never see you again. Like, I have to get to know you a little bit.
Right.
I know you probably should never fall in love with your, you know, hookers, but I want to know who you are. I remember I was in South Africa with a bunch of comedians and it was my birthday. It happened to be my birthday there. And they said, we're taking you to a strip club. Now, South Africa strip clubs are very different. Not that I've been to a ton in the States, but they took me to one where it's just like, there's not, you can't even find a filling in someone's tooth. There's no, these women are wearing nothing, not even contact lenses. I mean, it's nothing.
That's not technically a strip joint.
No,
that's just naked women place.
Right. Yeah. That's a naked women place. And, you know, I was talking to the strippers and asking them about, like, where are you from? Where'd you grow up? Do you have siblings? Like, personal stuff. And the other comics were like, just, we're getting you a lap dance because it's your birthday and it's hilarious. And you're having a conversation with this woman and probably trying to talk her out of being here.
You're right. There's so much more that you could have with your life right now. Oh, that brings back painful memories of having a gig when I was early in my radio career as a 21 and 22 year old to there's a Hollywood Tropicana over here off the 101, and I was hosting these contests, and there were like mud wrestlers in one floor, and of course, me being me, I was the listening guy. They would tell me their stories, and they were working their way through school.
Right.
And all the other guys are going, did you get a number? And it's like, oh, no, she's going to law school. And I had their backstory. We were best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, the special, You Did This to Me, which, by the way, you mentioned crowdsourced. And how gratifying is that you got fans and people to kind of, you know,
look,
just pony up and do that for you.
Yeah, I was truly blown away. I can't even find words. So just overwhelmed with, you know, pride that like the fans came out and that they really believe in me. But also, I will never do that BS again. never, never, never.
Why?
Because it's running for mayor.
Yeah.
Can I expect your vote? Can you promise me your vote? Like,
yeah, it's campaigning.
You're shaking hands. You're like, hey, everybody, I just
you're trying to squeeze them for every dollar they are willing to
and
give
I
up.
And I can't do it. So difficult for me because I'm not one of those people. That's why I'm bad at things like Periscope. And look at me. I'm not good at look at me unless I'm on stage. I don't like doing it off stage. It really actually annoys me that that's part of my job, but I'll do it and I begrudgingly do it. And I'm like, all right, I'll tweet. You know what I mean? And here's a Facebook post and I'll Periscope while jogging because I know that's what's expected of us now.
Right.
But it's really hard. There were days when a comedian had to be funny 1 hour out of the day. Now it's 24 hours.
Right.
You got to be funny. You got to be on. You got to be there. You got to be present. Don't forget about me.
In addition to doing the hard work of actually going up and being in front of audiences.
When do you have time to write?
Yeah.
When do you have time to just be a person so you have something to write about?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is if when you're so wrapped up in social media and promoting yourself and being that presence, when do you get the life stuff that really your act needs to be about?
Yeah.
How many jokes about Twitter can you make?
Well, my 5-year-old interrupted my thought yesterday. I was thinking of, oh, this would be funny to tweet. And he came in and asked me something. And I was like, can't you see mommy is trying to tweet? And he totally interrupted me. And I thought I had a really good thing going.
Yeah.
And it went out of my head. And I was like, you know, what? I don't understand kids.
I know. They just
don't appreciate.
Get it.
And he said, when are you going to work harder at your job so you can have a house with a backyard? That's what he said.
I'm telling you, that kid, the Terminator, the 5-year-old Terminator.
Do you remember a long time ago there was, I mean, this is millions of years ago, there was a, what was the show? The Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a show where the kid was too smart and the government took the kid away. That was a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
So this is the opposite. This is the government sending these smart kids.
We're going to work on this together.
We're going to write it down.
Yeah, we are. Kiri, you're awesome. You're so freaking funny. Your special is great, and it's You Did This to Me. I'm saying it just like a normal human. It doesn't sound right. Can I hear a little You Did This to
Me? You did this to me.
Yes. I just need that voice. It just doesn't come across well without that voice. Is on Amazon Prime for all the Prime people and where else?
Google Play, iTunes. Awesome. It's anywhere that people get their streaming content. Someone's like, I got mine on Roku. I don't even know what a Roku is. It's, you know, video on demand and Dish and soon out on Hulu. And then hopefully hopefully Netflix.
Awesome. So good. And luckily, you were right there at the beginning of apparently the trend of pregnant female stand-up comics doing specials because now everybody's doing them.
Yeah. No one can keep their legs closed. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you're a podcast and
yes,
good Lord,
the
woman.
Kira Sultanovich show.
It is. Literally, you have nine things you have to do.
You
keep
have
doing.
To.
And everybody check out Kira jogging tomorrow morning on Periscope.
I will do it.
Absolutely. All right. Give us a shout out. I forgot about this. My James Lipton-like speed round questions. If you were forced upon a karaoke stage, what would the song be? The go-to song for Kira?
Billy Joel. Anything Billy Joel or anything Journey. But Billy Joel, probably Billy Joel.
Like?
Piano Man.
Oh, really?
Anything from Glass Houses.
All right. Oh, okay. Piano Man's a little slow for karaoke. I'm just
saying. Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's long and it's slow.
It's long and slow.
Yeah.
Well,
okay, that's we're talking about karaoke.
Okay.
All right. Let's what are the other questions? Damn it. Would you, if you haven't yet, would you ever consider working with a monkey?
I have already.
Okay.
Well, I didn't work with him. Her? I think it was a girl.
Yeah.
I don't think they allow boy ones.
Oh. They get aggressive or something?
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I know.
I kind of already did.
What'd you do?
A bar mitzvah.
What?
I know.
Wait a minute. I did this special for Animal Planet and I had to do this segment on blah, blah. A bar mitzvah.
This is even worse. It was my nephew's bar mitzvah.
And there was a monkey.
Yeah, because my sister-in-law...
So you didn't do an act with a monkey. It just happened to be part of the entertainment.
It was part of
the
thing.
Or the...
Yeah. Okay. And I just had to... It was... They had so much money, they didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to spend their money. So they were like, let's get a monkey. It was awful. But I have worked with monkeys before, and I can't remember. Oh, wow. I also worked at the San Diego Zoo.
All right. Well, there had to be monkeys involved
there
with
were
that
a lot.
At some point.
There were a lot. All yeah. Right. But I would, as long as I felt like it was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can tell when a monkey's like, look, I'm fed.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm wearing a vest, but I don't mind. I'm allowed to monkey around, do whatever my monkey
right.
business is, and I'm not held in some sort of terrible, cramped
right.
condition.
As long as the rights of the monkey are respected.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, good.
But I'm thrilled that things like Ringling Brothers and SeaWorld are finally coming around.
Yeah. 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 They finished Circus Vargas, I think, have now started with no animals. You're an animal lover.
I'm not.
What?
I'll be honest. I can't touch
what?
Them.
You don't have any?
I had Dobermans when I was a kid.
Right.
And those are not real dogs. Those are not, it's like cuddling up to a machine gun. It's not a real dog. But I had two Dobermans as a kid, and that kind of, I was like, well, I'm done with dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, because okay. they were Russian Dobermans who ate borscht. They ate borscht!
Well, there are smaller,
they
cuddlier.
They were huge!
But there are, you know, more loving, little nurturing
yeah,
breeds.
But again, you're asking for non-nurturing people to okay. get a nurturing breed of dog.
All right, I don't want to try and change you.
But I'm not an animal lover in the sense of I can't just, like, pick up a, oh, can I hold your, no, I'm not going to, I don't want to hold or touch, but I don't want them with their feet stapled to a tricycle.
Well, good. You don't want one, but you care about them.
Yes.
Good. All right, so you've got some depth. That's good. We've established something deep here on the Snark Monkey Podcast. Kara, you're awesome. Thank you so much. Good luck with everything. I'll have you back if that's okay. We'll talk again.
I would love
when
it.
The next thing happens.
We're pitching our show.
All right, that's right. When we get to announce Terminator First Grade, whatever mm-hmm. we're going to call it. Oh, there we go. We combine two. Here we go. This is how we wrap things up.
two movies.
Yes, you know where I'm going. It's
Kindergarten
it's
Cop.
It's Kindergarten Terminator.
Terminator
Cop. All right. So.
Get a monkey.
Get a monkey!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.